You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Welcome, friends. This is an isolated video service of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, which has existed in virtual and real and various iterations since 1854. This is the very first time we've ever done worship in this format, so it's a first for us all, so we're all each other's guinea pigs here. But just sit back, relax, maybe have your hand near your mouse, and watch this like a TED Talk. You'll occasionally be asked to click something, see how we go with it. I mean, we're all venturing into the unknown together as a species, into an unfamiliar landscape for us all, but talk about today a landscape bursting with possibilities of a new world that's being birthed by this crisis. The word crisis, by the way, only means turning point. The service takes place not just in landscapes of virtual space, but also from the actual land of the Kaurna people, from which our church has drawn its life and living for generations. So it's fitting that we make space to acknowledge and pay our respects to the Kaurna people, to their elders past, present, and emerging, recognizing that this land is theirs from a long time ago, that it has never been ceded, and is of continuing spiritual importance to the living Kaurna people today. So in that same spirit of welcome and inclusion, South Australian Unitarian services are intended to serve the spiritual needs of everyone as far as that's possible. We are essentially religious pluralists. It should not matter what God or gods you believe in or don't or are still figuring out. It shouldn't matter what faith traditions you come from or adhere to or whether you adhere to any at all. These services serve you by lifting up things of human worth. That is why we call them worship. It's from the old English word worship, which is to raise something to worth. I hope to see you after this service from 11:30 to 12:30 Australian Central Time on Zoom for our live coffee hour. If you're watching this and we don't have your email address, we don't know who you are, please send your email address to this address. All are welcome there, as indeed are you. Welcome to follow things like our regular podcasts on Apple iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on Twitter, and check out our website. Now, if you don't have the candle or a chalice handy, pause this presentation. You can do it. And go and get one. I'll still be here when you come back, and we can light our lights together. So make an appropriate space of stillness in yourself so that you can hear these words that set our intentions today and hear them in your deeper understanding. We gather in this time of uncertainty, full of unknowns, as angst closes in upon us. We light this flame. We cut through the darkness of isolation and are warmed by the fires of our interconnection. From this moment, this radical moment, we find a certainty within the knowable bonds of community and love. Of God, or whatever means the good, be praised for the miracle and mystery that is our life. May your lights continue to shine in the space that does not even exist yet. We can, in fact, join in singing Spirit of Life. If you just click that link there, control-click that, right-click it, and it will open another frame, and you can sing along with it. It's a really lovely setting. And then come back to this slideshow. I'll see you after the hymn. Now, if any children are watching at home, there's a great little story that I swear has no political message at all. It leaves you with a question. talk with your parents about afterwards. It's called Who Does the Land Belong To? And again, if you're not interested in a great old wisdom story, ancient wisdom story drawn from both Muslim and Jewish traditions, just skip to the next slide and you can move ahead. But if you're sticking around, this story is called Who Does the Land Belong To? Well, once upon a time, in a very long time ago, there was a farmer that owned a bit of land. And he had owned it for a long time, and he was getting kind of tired of seeing the same fields and trees and animals and so on, and he decided he wanted to go off and see the world and have a great adventure. But he didn't want the land to go to rack and ruin, so he wanted to find someone who would look after the place for him while he was away on his global adventures. So he put out an ad in the town, and he found a caretaker, someone to take care of his land and keep it productive while he was away. So they met, and they agreed that the caretaker would take all of the profit from the land that, you know, while he worked it, while the farmer was away. So they agreed on this, and off the farmer went on his great adventure. Well, 1 year passed. 2 years passed. Still no farmer. It'd be a heck of an adventure. 5 years passed. Still no farmer. And 10 years passed. I mean, he's, who knows what's happened to him at this point, right? The caretaker is still working the land and has pretty much given up seeing him again. Now, 20 years pass, and still there's no, oh, wait, oh, there he is, just coming down the road. The caretaker saw the farmer in the distance, recognized him, though the years had passed, and welcomed him. And the farmer looked around at the land that he had left 20 years ago and saw that the fields were green and the trees were heavy with fruit and the barn was full of cows and pigs and chickens and all sorts of livestock making all sorts of sounds. And he sees that the caretaker has done a wonderful job looking after this land and made it intensely productive. So the caretaker makes them some tea, and they sit down, and they catch up on all the gossip. The farmer tells the caretaker all about the adventures he's had while he's away, and the caretaker tells him all about the gossip from the village and the valley since the farmer had left. And as the conversation's coming to a conclusion, the farmer says to the caretaker, "Well, where will you go now?" The caretaker says, "Go. Where should I go? I've worked this land for 20 years. Surely this land belongs to me now." The farmer said, "Don't be ridiculous. I have the lease. This is my land. It's been in my family for generations." Well, as you can imagine, they argued about this for a bit, and things got quite heated. But then they finally decided that they agreed that they disagreed about who the land belonged to. So they did agree to go and talk to the wise men of the village. So they went off to the wise men of the village, and they told their story. Each presented their arguments for why they thought the land belonged to them. And the wise man was like, "Man, this is a tough one. I do not know how to work this out. But how about we consult an authority even greater than mine?" And the farmer and the caretaker went, who would that be? Are we going to go to a city and sit with a judge? And they went, no, follow me. So the wise man led them back to the land that they had left to come and see him. And he lay down, he put his ear to the ground for a long time and listened and listened and listened. And then after a while he got up, brushed off his clothes, and said, "The land has told me that neither of you own it." And they were like, "Well, no, that's crazy. One of us has to own it. He has the title, but I've done the work," and so on. And he said, No. You misunderstand. The land doesn't belong to either of you. You both belong to the land." And the wise man with that walked off back to the village, and the farmer and the caretaker looked at each other for a long time. Now here's a question to talk about with your parents afterwards. Specifically, how does the wise man's answer help the farmer and the caretaker work out what to do next with the land? So that's your story for today. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you tell it to other people, because stories only live. I have a guided meditation here that I've been using with Pembroke staff and students. as you imagine, it's been really well taken up in the last couple of weeks. And it's about 8 minutes guided meditation. If you are not into that sort of thing, you can just skip ahead to the next slide and pick up the presentation from there. But if you are, and you're comfortably seated, we can begin. So let's just take a moment to get comfortable with where we're sitting. There's no need to be perfectly upright or in any position, but just sitting so you can focus and relax, and be at ease in body and mind. As you sit there, take a few deep breaths. As you breathe in, sense that you're taking in fresh air. Feel your lungs expanding, feel your body expanding, right down to your belly. And as you breathe out, have a sense of letting go. Letting go of whatever's been going on for you today or recently. Feel the muscles in your body soften as you exhale. And a couple more times, breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. And on your next breath out, if you feel comfortable and safe to do so, gently close your eyes. And as you sit, enjoy that sense of having put everything down, everything away, behind you. So no one's making any demands on you right now. All that matters is here, now. Notice the sensation of your body pressing down into the seat beneath you. Notice the points of contact that your body has with the seat, the back of the seat. And notice that feeling of being grounded. Feet on the floor, arms or hands on your legs or the table. Now take a moment without opening the eyes to sense the environment around you. Different sounds, different smells, the temperature, any movement or stillness you can sense. With eyes closed, simply become more aware of the space around you. Begin to notice any areas in your body where you seem to be holding tension. There's no need to fix them. Just let them unwind on their own as you become aware of them. Just notice how your body feels. Allow any tension to arise. Allow yourself to feel any tiredness. Allow yourself to feel any heaviness. Becoming aware of these is good. Now allow your body and your mind more space. Space to be more alert, more awake, more aware as you go through your day today. And start to notice the breath now. Breath is a good indication of how we feel in our mind and body. There's no need to change it. Just notice if the breaths are short or long or deep or shallow. Easy flowing or not flowing with ease. Where are your thoughts now? Each time a thought pops in your mind, follows it, just acknowledge it let go of it. Gently bring your awareness back to the present in that feeling of your breath flowing in and out of your body. Now in your mind, imagine a warm golden ray of gentle sunlight flowing down onto you, showering you like warm water, your shoulders, your back, or your head, or wherever feels comfortable. This light is washing away any remaining tension that may be remaining so that it can be left behind. Any tension simply melts away. You can watch this golden light work systematically down the body, feeling it wash away any tension down to your toes, out to your fingertips. You'll leave any troubling thoughts or sensations you had behind. Watch them go. Feel now that your entire body is not separate from the light, but part of it, that you and the light are one. Begin to sense the ease and warmth, a reset of body and mind so that you can meet whatever comes next. When you're on time, when you are quite ready, gently open your eyes again. You can come back to this meditation anytime, really, since you've got it recorded here. Remember, meditation only works if you work it. I've included here, to bring us back into the rhythms of reality, a beautiful piece of choral music by Howard Goodall from Psalm 23, The Lord is My Shepherd. Forgetting about, you know, the language around this, it is simply a thing of beauty. So if you right-click the YouTube link, to open it into a new window, you can have it listen and then come back to this. You can pause this slide and come back to it when you're ready. Enjoy. This is a reading that may not be from the Psalms, but when I came across it recently, it absolutely froze me in my tracks. It's called None of Us Are Immune. It's by Jeff Foster. It's going to be okay. It really is. We will face the situation together with love, humor, and patience. We will weep together. We will laugh together. We will discover togetherness in our apartness. And the worst of it will end someday. And we will have learned so much by then. We will now face very difficult feelings inside of us. Fear, grief, the loss of an old way of life, our devastated plans. We will learn to face ourselves. Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, nowhere to go except within. Sacred quarantine. We will learn to face our boredom, our restlessness, that part of us that wants to be somewhere else, with someone else, doing something else, having some other experience in some other now, with some other life. We will let go of the wonderful future we had planned. We will let the fantasy future die, release it, and grieve it. We will return to the solidity and warmth of the present. We will make the present our home. We will begin again here, build a new house on new soil. We will explore a new way of living, strange at first, yes, but full of possibility, slower, kinder, quieter. We will talk to each other honestly about death and life and impermanence and how we feel about all the changes that have come to us and our loved ones. We will learn to value life a little more. Yes, perhaps we will learn to value life a little more and live with our hearts cracked, slightly open to the elements, and lean into uncertainty and find our salvation there. None of us are immune to change, to rupture, to the shattering of old familiar forms. This is the way of things. This has always been the way of things. So from this perspective, nothing has gone wrong. Crisis simply means turning point, and none of us are immune from the turning. The breaking of the old makes way for the birth of the new. It has always been this way. Love, humor, patience. With these things, we will come through, stronger than before, renewed, ready. Words of Jeff Foster. If you follow the newsletter, I know the service was promised as bush bathing. Well, was it meant to be at Shady Grove too, but obviously that's not going to happen. Besides, as your minister, I thought I had better address the elephant in the room, which is that we are not in the room, a room, but in front of screens apart from each other. This new medium contains a new message. What an interesting time in human history to be living through. A deadly pandemic on a highly mobile and interdependent planet of 8 billion beings who can be uniquely conscious of what's happening, unlike the dinosaurs and the meteor. We know our world is being changed as we speak. Its familiar patterns, practices, its values. We feel these changes, and we are, midwifing some of these changes ourselves. Changes in how we worship, how we manage and deploy our Unitarian message. Changes in how we collectivize, even when we are atomized, as we are now. And with such profound change, no matter how thrilling in possibility, always comes a sense of loss. We feel it. Loss of the old ways of doing our traditional and honorable worship. Even loss of things like physical presence and proximity, touch, handshakes, hugs. I can't even hug my daughters, for God's sake. It all seems against nature. Will things ever be normal again? What parts of normal will we want back? What parts are we better off without? So many questions. More questions than answers. But in moments like this of radical uncertainty, in facing mystery, is a sacredness. Because when we become humbled, we are left with what we do know, and thus what we may put our faith in. Now, I am no silver linings Pollyanna. I think you would know that about me by now, but I have been finding deep wellsprings of faith and hope and love appearing in this new landscape. These may not be immediately apparent to you, but look deeper. On the micro and the macro level, as individual humans and as an entire species, we are grieving. Like some dear old relative is slipping through our fingers, things are passing away. I've been a minister long enough to recognize grief when I see it, and it is all around. I have seen all of Kubler-Ross's 5 stages in a single day. There's been flat denial, like, oh, they're making too much of this, or if I get it, it'll just be a bad cold. There's been sadness, depression, weeping in the streets. There's been bargaining, like, oh, if I hand sanitize for a couple of weeks and, stay inside, then I can see my friends again for drinks. There's been anger. Talk to anybody in a center link line. But also, there's been some of the best examples of leadership I've seen have been able to hack through to that final stage, acceptance, which says, this is the new reality. How are we going to manage it? How are we going to deal with it? But there is a sixth stage that was added late to Kubler-Ross's 5th stage, the 5 stages, a redemptive sixth stage, which I'll come back to in a moment. For us, My dear ones, as we move forward in this landscape of a widespread and generalized grieving, it would be wise to behave as we would among a grieving family. Every wisdom tradition that's ever been on earth says that in the presence of grief, you do awaken and indeed ramp up your compassion. Compassion when people can't cope. Compassion when people try new things and screw them up, like I'm probably doing with this. Compassion when people's denial puts themselves and others at risk. Compassion when people's terror leads them to irrational acts of hoarding or panic. Compassion with those that seem to be behaving a little oddly. You know, grief, unexpressed or unprocessed, comes out in strange sideways coping mechanisms. Your compassion is going to be more needed than we can ever recall in human history and living memory. More compassion includes yourself, of course, something that the people pleasers and nurturers and carers among us find hard to remember and hard to practice even when we do remember. No sane person should be acting as if nothing is happening to you. A whole lot of adjustments are happening for us to process. So during this time of distance work, distance communication, and isolation, you are allowed to take advantage of it to rest. You are allowed to take a break. You're allowed to just do what you can do. There's no need to set the world on fire with breakthrough innovations and communicating with people. I mean, I'm just talking to a camera in my office, for God's sake. You're allowed to treat yourself, indulge yourself, distract yourself, especially from the news cycle, whose raison d'etre, remember, is to keep your anxiety and thus your engagement with news peaked all the time. You are allowed to be cared for by asking for what you need. Self-compassion is not selfish. Self-compassion helps us be compassionate to others, because how are we going to export what we're not growing within our own borders? Be compassionate with yourself. Because if we Unitarians don't model compassion in all our encounters with people, can we really blame folks for not knowing about us or thinking we're just another bunch of pious folk? People in the wider world should come to know us by our loving kindness. So we can be co-creators of a new way of being this pandemic is forcing us into. Now, the world may never be the same again, but many wise people are already calling this global pandemic a great awakening of individual compassion and the social compassion we call justice that the planet so needs. We're discovering things. We're discovering, for example, that homelessness could always have been solved with all the empty hotel rooms and investment real estate that are now being commandeered for quarantine if you're the kind of person with the money to travel. We're learning there was always enough wealth in the system to keep the poorest and most vulnerable at least going. We're realizing that paying living wages is not some liberal talking point, but actually a matter of life and death. We are beginning to realize what jobs actually matter to the social order, and that a job's wage or social status has nothing to do with its social value. We're realizing that money is nice. Money may get us tested first, but it's not going to spare us. We're realizing things like we need the internet, like power and water, as a public utility. How else would you be looking at me now? We're realizing science does, in fact, go beyond politics. We're realizing we are only ever as strong as our weakest. Out of love, we are going to the greatest lengths to protect them. We're realizing after 40 years of being told that there's no such thing as a society and that government is the problem, all of a sudden, we seem keenly aware of the need for an inclusive social fabric, which means loving our neighbors as ourselves. And who is our neighbor? Our neighbor is everybody. even when loving them is as counterintuitive as not touching or even visiting them. Now, those of you of a conventional religious background may be wondering where God is in all this change and loss and grief and emergent social awareness. Well, I don't know, but I can tell you where I think he's not. No, COVID is not divine punishment. No, COVID is not some Abrahamic test of our faith. I mean, if your idea of God is an abusive or a gaslighting relationship, you might want to ask yourself why you'd want to be in that. But if, as St. Paul says, loving your neighbor as yourself is the whole of the law, it means that what we call God can only be known when we love each other. What we call God can only be known when we love each other, including those we don't even like. That what we call God is experienced is that enlargement of self you feel when you connect with others in loving kindness. So theologically, COVID might be nothing less than an invitation to remember what we truly are. Oh, my dears, this is indeed a historic time. The poet Donna Ashworth says, history will remember when the world stopped and the flight stayed on the ground and the cars parked in the street and the trains didn't run. History will remember when the schools closed and the children stayed indoors and the medical staff walked towards the fire and they didn't run. History will remember when the people sang on their balconies in isolation, but so very much together in courage and song. History will remember when the people fought for their old and their weak, protecting their vulnerable by doing nothing at all. History will remember when the virus left and the houses opened and the people came out and hugged and kissed and started again, kinder than before. Amen to that. So may that be. So like out of a prophecy or a prayer, a new kingdom is coming. So may we never go back to the old ways of everybody for themselves and the devil take the hindmost. May we never again fail to see clearly the intricate, invisible, web-like systems that inescapably connect us, or how fragile they are, how fragile all life itself is in a universe largely lifeless. And out of our collective grieving, we are all about to discover something wonderful. We are about to learn what is truly meaningful. And that is the last stage of grief added late to the familiar five. The sixth and last stage of grief is meaning. That's meaning with a capital M. May you find yours. Amen. It's an opportunity to sing your little hearts out here. Right-click on the link. You'll be taken to a slideshow with the words on it. Enya singing, how can I keep from singing? When friends by shame are undefiled, how can I keep from singing? And you can pause this slideshow and come back for a final blessing. When this ends, may we find that we have become more like the people we wanted to be, the people we hoped to be, the people we were called to be from a long time ago. And may we stay that way, better for each other, for having been through this time. Amen. Stay safe. Stay well. May you find meaning in all this. I hope to see you in the Zoom meeting for coffee. Till next time.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing UnitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.